This podcast is brought to you by Sega's Napoleon Total War, the newest chapter in the award-winning Total War series. Rated T for teen.
Eric, was there anything you saw at GDC you can talk about that you liked?
EnviroBear 2010.
Yes.
Good afternoon, good evening, and good night, PC Gamer Podcast listeners. It is Friday, March 12th, and we are here for PC Gamer Podcast episode 214, and I am happy that you are here with us. Well, not actually here with us, but you are in spirit, and hopefully in the form of reader-submitted questions, or else our Q&A section is going to be very boring. Let's not worry about that just yet. Right now, let's meet our crew of intrepid explorers, reviews editor and rations officer, Dan Stapleton.
I'm only mildly intrepid.
Okay, that's good enough. You qualify.
All right, I'll take it.
Epic intern and Black Ops commando, Eric Belsas.
Privyet. I was trained in Russia for Black Ops.
Stop smiling then if you're trained in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
No smiling.
Da.
Podcast producer and recon expert, Andy Bauman.
That's right. Specialized in sniper rifles and long-range headshots or something.
I know, dude. I was trying to picture, because like, the easy route would have been communications officer, right?
Oh, yeah, because like, I've got all the equipment and microphones. Yeah.
But then I was like, no, Andy Bauman's going to be that guy who's like dressed in all white, who's going to like be snowboarding down the hill and like camp out like a snow mound for like weeks for the perfect spot, and then he's going to take him out.
That's so true. And then I'll do the communications afterwards, just to report
exactly.
The kill. That's right.
Yeah, just to brag about it, really.
No, just to, you know, very business.
Okay, business. All right.
Tango down.
All right, gentlemen, enough small talk. Let's talk about games.
I like
So there's
those.
Been a lot of exciting news coming out of our hometown, San Francisco, this week. All of us here at PC Gamer have been down at GDC talking with who's who in the PC Gamer industry, or PC Games industry. So we'll be briefly touching on all the stuff we can talk about right now. A lot of it's under NDA, and we won't be able to talk about it until our next issue, unfortunately. But who wants to kick off GDC this year?
Well, my GDC experience was a little bit shortened or abbreviated by jury duty, which always occurs at the worst possible time.
That's the law of the universe.
they finally disqualified me from the jury, but it took 3 days of selection. That was fun. I thought you just meant
it came on HBO, the movie Jury Duty, and you had to watch it.
Yeah,
instead of going to GDC.
So what I did see that I can talk about, it would be Sam & Max Season 3, which this is launching pretty soon. It's April 14th. Is that what they said, Eric?
April 14th is the first episode, the penal zone, I believe.
they showed us the first few minutes of the kind of the prelude to the new season. Eric, you played the two previous seasons, right?
I've played season one and two, and
yeah. I didn't play the end of season two, so I don't know if it picks up right where that left off.
It doesn't seem like right where it left off, but there's definitely references in there. I mean, they've got Stinky, they've got the Mole Man. So
was the space gorilla in the last one?
No, he is. I think he's returning from the very like old classic LucasArts franchise. It's been a long time since I played those ones, but okay. He was not in season one or two yet.
Yeah, because honestly, I'm a bit of a Sam & Max novice. So when I went in there, I was a little bit lost, but still highly entertained by the ridiculous storyline they're setting up, where Max has. So I have somehow acquired amazing psychic powers and can like shapeshift and teleport. And what was the third one they showed us?
Can he read minds?
Oh, that's right. He's telepathic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't even in that meeting, and I guess that I just want to brag about that right now.
Well, when you say amazing mental powers, there are only a few that you can go from. And
like, I have
shapeshifting isn't even a mental power, really. But But yeah, so they start out trapped on the ship of this evil space gorilla who's destroying the city, and they have to stop him. And it's just really well done, like in terms of pacing. Like it jumps right into the action, which they were talking about how, and actually this is where they lost me in the first one. I started playing Sam and Max season one, episode one, and didn't really get much beyond the initial office area because, you know, it was a little bit slow paced. I didn't get into it. Something shiny caught my eye and off I went. But this one gets right into a kind of an action scene. So I'm already looking forward to playing more. Actually, after seeing that, I now want to go back and play the first two, just because, like, and the Monkey Island Tales, have kind of hooked me. So now I'm looking for more. But the standout character of the season three preview they showed was, the kind of Twilight Zone-esque narrator who, is just incredibly random non sequitur, well, not non sequiturs, but just really strange things that he says that had me cracking up. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
Can the players hear the narrator, or is it just outside? Oh,
the players hear him, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, the characters.
They didn't have them interacting at all in the beginning. It could be, I wouldn't at all be surprised if they have them interacting
later on. That would be very Sam and Max of them.
Yes.
But yeah, you can see the narrator a little bit in the trailer that came out. And he's hilarious.
So Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, you weren't much of an adventure gamer like back when adventure games were big, were you?
Not really. I mean, I played like the Indiana Jones adventure games, and I played, what else did I play? There's probably something. I never played like the old Monkey Island games. I never played Full Throttle. I never played pretty much any of the other LucasArts ones beyond Indiana Jones.
So what is it about like adventure games now or these particular adventure games that's kind of getting you back into it when there's, you know, admittedly much more quality options out there than there were?
Well, I've just trying to sample more things, really. It's not that these adventure games are better than the old ones, I don't think. But, you know, I've finally given them a little bit more of my time to invest in them, and they've gotten their hooks in me a little bit. I'm still not going to become a hardcore adventure game fan, I don't think. But, you know, for the high quality ones, at least, they've got my interest.
I need you to confirm or deny the rumors that you were almost rolling on the floor laughing during the Sam & Max 3 preview.
I think that might be an exaggeration. That was, I guess you heard that from them after I left.
From Eric, actually.
Oh, really? Eric, you're a dirty liar.
I said almost, first of all, and there was some parts where we were all cracking up.
I cracked up and laughed out loud, but I remained firmly in my seat.
Fair enough. That is fair good. Enough.
It's good to know you still maintain control.
In conclusion, we can all look forward to some SNM later.
Yes, not together.
Yeah, right. Unless you want to play, you know, next to me.
I'm just going to not even touch that one.
Let's move on, shall we? Eric, what was your highlight of GDC that you could talk about?
Let's see.
I know you met someone that's almost like an idol to you.
I did. I met the man, the legend. Let's see if I can find his business card.
You don't even know his name.
Justin Smith. How could I forget that? The man behind EnviroBear 2000, one of the breakaway hits of this year.
The warped and twisted mind behind EnviroBear.
Yeah, I think Logan wants to have him tried as a war criminal.
he was incredibly well-spoken, had a fantastic sense of humor about the utterly absurd game he had created. So we had fun chatting. He had on the floor a version of EnviroBear that was rendered in full, like, 3D graphics, like Unreal Engine 2 style. It was incredible.
There are now dynamic shadows on those fish.
That's right. And the badger even more fierce looking.
Well, that is good. Did you play the 3D version?
There was actually quite a line, so I opted to just talk to Justin and let the people on the floor play the games.
That is noble of you, sir.
I guess I can also talk about seeing Ruse, the new Ubisoft RTS that's playable on touchscreen. So they did have like a 24-inch touchscreen there set up. Unfortunately, the touchscreen was not a capacitive touchscreen. It was the kind that uses I forget what the term for it is, but it's kind that uses like infrared cameras to track your fingers. So while it was technically multi-touch, it didn't work most of the time, which made it really frustrating. So yeah, I would recommend against, like, if you see that kind of monitor. This one was made by Dell, but I would recommend against if you want to play an RTS on a touchscreen monitor, just based on this experience anyway. I would not buy a touchscreen monitor to play RTS unless it's capacitive, which I guess are really expensive right now for a big one. But the game itself looked cool. The open beta just started too, so I'm meaning to jump into that. It's competing with my open beta, or not, I guess my beta RTS time with StarCraft right now, so I have not yet gotten into it, but I plan to.
So if you had the capacitive monitor, like, do you think that provides an actual, a significant advantage over using just the mouse and keyboard? I mean, other than cool, just cause like, that's like the future right there. I feel like I'm like, yes, I am in Tron moving this stuff.
If anything, it's a disadvantage because speed wise, you're never going to match the input speed and accuracy of a mouse and, you know, keyboard shortcuts. There's just no way. Because you on the keyboard, you have your fingers right by all the hotkeys as opposed to, you know, punching and packing on the screen, on the interface and the mouse, you know, the speed and accuracy of the mouse is unparalleled. So you're kind of putting yourself at a disadvantage, for that kind of immersive factor. But you know, when it does work, it's pretty cool. I mean, to be able to, you know, touch a unit and say, I want you to go over here, or, you know, to touch something and drag it over to the other side of the screen. I want to build this here, and, you know, then kind of almost drawing routes with your finger. And the, you know, the zooming when it works is great.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. I mean, given a few more years, it'll be, you know, awesome. And I mean, like, this game in particular is kind of slow paced. It's really modeled after board games in a lot of ways. So it's very well suited for touch controls, because it's not about your actions per minute. It's a more manageable pace. So, you know, if they ever get that nailed down, it'll be great.
All right. You heard it here. Wait. So one of my highlights of GDC was actually, like, and I don't expect everyone else to be super excited about this. I sat down and talked with American McGee for about an hour. And I know he has done some really bad stuff recently, but, like, I still want to believe in him so badly. And I think I might be the last one here who's holding out hope. But it's really interesting.
There's always hope, just not, you know, not a lot of hope.
Yeah, even with Alice 2, it's like he's going back to his roots. This is where he got it right.
It might be good. I'm not disqualifying the possibility that maybe it could be good. But, you know, we don't really know anything about the game at this point. We don't even know if it's going to be the same style of game that Alice 1 was.
Yeah, I think it is. Based on my talks with him yesterday, it's really interesting. We were just kind of talking about just the whole process of kind of setting up a development studio and like a 2-year schedule to get that game done and producing stuff every 2 months. In-house. And so it seems like a lot of maybe Grim was kind of growing pains, kind of setting up the studio, figuring out how things work. I'm hoping all the problems are kind of sorted out now. Now they can focus on Alice and get it right. But yeah, he's a really cool guy. If nothing else, he has very interesting ideas about the industry.
And a funky name. Very patriotic.
Yes. Extremely patriotic. This is actually the first time he'd been in America in 2.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's kind of surprising. Not living up to his name, if I may say so myself. A couple other news that came out of GDC this week we can talk about. I mean, on live, kind of talked about their pricing structure. There hasn't been a lot of good reception to this.
Yeah, it was kind of a downer. They want $15 a month plus whatever you spend to actually play the games. That's asking a bit much.
Yeah. I don't think they've said it's not going to be like the full $40 to buy the game, right?
I don't know if it could be $40 or $50. Who knows? A lot of it could be like rental fees. I think that's part of their plan is to have, you can rent a game for a period of time for, considerably cheaper than actually buying it. So, it might be okay. I mean, the problem is you're kind of paying for a potentially lesser experience than you're getting with running the game locally, and that it's going to be lower res. You're subject to all kinds of weird lag delays that who knows if it's actually going to work when it's deployed in a kind of unsafe environment. We'll have to wait for the beta to launch before we can test that. But yeah, it doesn't make me think, oh wow, that's a fantastic deal. I got to get in on that.
Yeah, and if they went to a structure that was more akin to kind of Netflix, where it's like maybe a higher monthly fee, but you can only maybe play one game at a time or something, would you be inclined to do this, or is this idea just kind of dead before it even starts?
I mean, again, it's going to depend on the quality of the service when it launches. They've got to have a trial application that I can like download their browser plugin. Or their software, however it's going to work, and test it out on my home computer to see how it works before I spend a dime, because otherwise there's no way I would sign up for that.
Yeah, Eric, do you feel the same?
I'm kind of a hardware graphics geek, so much so that like I don't like they're offering games streaming at, I believe, 1280 by 720, 720p resolution. That's not acceptable for me. In a shooter, that's not enough to see someone at a reasonable distance. You're going to get shot. So for multiplayer, I don't see this working. What I would love to have something like on live is like, I suppose what they're more advertising it for is on the go, like with a netbook or something, and playing, being able to stream maybe more casual games. Your adventure games and all sorts of stuff that doesn't require too much fidelity and too much action. But the problem there is when you're on like a netbook, you're usually on a wireless network, which just doesn't have the kind of bandwidth to support something like OnLive anyway. So I don't know. It certainly hasn't convinced me yet.
Yeah, it certainly seems like an odd kind of combination of requirements where this would be useful and where it would actually be efficient. There doesn't seem to be a lot of crossover there. It'll be interesting to see plays out.
And we also had a question earlier about when the next Tomb Raider game is going to come out. This is something that came out of GDC. It's not technically a Tomb Raider game in that it does not have Tomb Raider in the title, but it is Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. So it is a Tomb Raider game in that, I guess, I mean, like the original Tomb Raider was Lara Croft Tomb Raider. So, but anyway, this is not your typical Tomb Raider game. It's a kind of a top down isometric action game, where, and co-op kind of style DLC, not DLC, but it's, I guess, the Xbox Live Arcade is kind of the target market for it. It's really a departure. I don't think there's ever been a Tomb Raider game or a Lara Croft game that wasn't a third person action adventure game. Does anyone else know of one?
No, this is definitely the first.
Right.
Have they said if there's going to be a lot of platforming, or is it going to kind of be like Torchlight and Diablo?
Well, it I mean, from the screenshots, it looks an awful lot like that, type of gameplay. I mean, there's got to be some jumping, but it, like platforming doesn't really work from that perspective.
Yeah.
So that answers that question about when that next game is going to be, but when there's going to be a new, kind of proper Tomb Raider game, there will be one, but who knows when it is.
Is that still out of Square Enix Europe?
It's Crystal Dynamics.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's true to form.
Yeah, so yeah. If they're making that game, are they also making a bigger Tomb Raider game, or is it just...
Almost certain. I mean, developers have, you know, multiple teams working under the same roof, so it's not like they...
This is Crystal Dynamics Jr.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, you know, it's a smaller team working on there for a more casual, you know, trying to expand the franchise into a more casual market, I guess.
The top-down view could be awkward if it's, like, right overhead.
It's not right overhead. It's isometric.
Oh, okay. So. Cleavage shot.
Oh, you know what else was announced was a browser based Battlestar Galactica MMO.
What? Which,
yeah, I mean it's browser based anymore. I mean that doesn't really necessarily mean, you know, have as much of a negative, you know, kind of cheap connotation than it used to. I mean, they refer to like Battlefield Heroes as browser based, even though it, you know, you just go to the webpage and push the launch button and it launches an application that, you know, it's not actually within the browser. But so, you know, it could be a pretty significant game in terms of, you know, content or whatever. I just hear that, and having watched all of the new Battlestar Galactica series, I just don't see how you could build an MMO into that universe. It just doesn't make any sense to me. It's too small. You know, there are no, outside of the Colonial Fleet and the Cylons, there's nobody else. What else are you going to do? Anybody else a fan of the show?
Yeah, I mean, I really like the show. I'm kind of along the same lines with you. Like, Battlestar Galactica makes perfect sense to me in, like, a board game. Or even, I don't know if you guys have played the card game Mafia, where, like, there's certain, like, some people get chosen as the Mafia, some's the Sheriff, and some's the Doctor. And it's, like, it's perfect for that sort of, like, quick jump in, try and backstab each other, and then reset it, because then you don't know who it is. But, I mean, I just don't see how it could be a big MMO. I mean, I could see it. I can't believe it's going to be anything more than, like, an RPing, just, like, turn-based, you get 200 turns a day or something to go exploring. I mean, I can't see them do a full-fledged MMO with it.
But even if you were to go exploring, I mean, there's nothing in the Battlestar Galactica universe. There are no aliens. There's nothing except for the Cylons and the humans.
Yeah, you could go, like, foraging for berries, and maybe you get jumped by a Cylon patrol or something like that. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm totally with you on this. It just doesn't make a lot of sense for anything beyond a quick experience.
Yeah, I mean, it screams for a, you know, flight sim, a space flight sim combat game. Other than that, no. Not interested in a Battlestar Galactica game.
So this is an official product, though, right? It's
yeah.
not like just some fans putting together a game.
No, this is a licensed product.
Yeah, that's an odd choice. But, you know, all the best to them. Also, Monkey Island 2 Special Edition is coming out this summer, and I'm very excited. Monkey Island 2 has the best story and the best, like, game elements of any of the Monkey Island games.
That's another one I'll have to go back and play with my newfound respect for adventure games.
Yes, it has the bone song, the leg bones connected to the thigh bone. I mean, how can you resist it? I can't wait to hear people singing that.
It's also got, like, the worst ending ever.
Yeah.
So
we just forget about the ending. That's okay. The rest of the game makes up for it.
I don't remember any of the puzzles. And
do you remember
barely.
The spit contest?
That's the only one I remember because it was so obnoxiously okay. hard. And so I'm looking forward to this one a lot to, like, just challenge myself, see if I can do it, because I remember being epically hard as
yeah,
a kid.
Yeah, it is incredibly hard. I did have to use a walkthrough a couple times, especially on that spit contest. I don't know how anybody could figure that out without a walkthrough.
Yeah, but there's just too many elements, like, involved.
Yeah. So, Dan, there's a challenge to you. If you can figure out the spit test without a walkthrough, I will salute you.
I don't know. There were a few puzzles in even Tales of Monkey Island that stumped me, so I don't know. Don't know if I'm up to that challenge.
All right.
Well, yeah, Tails stumped you, dude. You're done
well,
for.
There were just a couple of things that I got kind of stuck on.
No, I got hung up a little bit, but I actually was able to make it through all the Tails without looking, which I was really proud of.
That is impressive. That's no small feat.
Hey, and congratulations to everybody at PC Gamer for 200 issues. I've been a loyal reader since the Dan Morris era and been listening to the podcast since episode 1. I was just calling to ask those of you that have contributed reviews of hardware games to the magazine, what is the most painful game or piece of hardware you have ever had to write a review for? And for those of you that have not, has there ever been a game or a piece of hardware that you bought based on a good review and just turned out to be total crap? Keep up the work, good work, guys. This is TJ from Kansas, and Andy, I still do not forgive you for the damage to my reputation caused when you called me a sweetheart after I called it on episode 187. Thanks. Bye.
What? I don't remember.
Andy says that about so many.
Yeah,
that,
he has so many sweethearts. It's hard to keep them straight.
Now my reputation is tarnished.
That was an interesting choice of words there, Josh.
My apologies.
Wait, what was the question? I
don't remember.
Okay, so have you ever reviewed something that was really taxing? Like it was really hard for you to do?
Every MMO.
Bad. Well, are we talking about, was it a bad game?
Yeah.
I guess the most recent really awful game I reviewed was called, Chain of Command, I believe. It was like this Russian made World War II game, or RTS, that it just looked and played awful. It had so many just awful design elements where you would start a mission and it would tell you, right in the start of the mission what your objective was. But if at any point, and like it was, in like a wall of badly translated text. And anytime you wanted to go back and check to see what your mission objective was, you would not be able to. You would have to restart the mission in order to find out what your objective was. But it didn't really matter because you could just lasso everything you had, select it, put, and, attack move, and you would win every mission. So it did not take very long to beat that game. And there was no multiplayer. So.
Wow. So well, at least it was fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, mine would definitely be Merchants of Brooklyn, which was a game that Dan suckered me into reviewing very early on the magazine. And not only is it a terrible game...
Dude, it's got CryEngine. CryEngine.
It's absolutely terrible. Like, I also got motion sickness playing it. And
really?
Cool. And so, I'd be able to play it in maybe, an hour and a half spurts, and then I'd start getting nauseous. But then I'd keep trying to power through it, because I was like, no, I got to get this in by, Monday. Got to get it in by Monday. And it's just a terrible experience. Because if it was an amazing game, I will put up with motion sickness to enjoy that. But when it's just, there's no redeeming value at all, it was tough.
So, you're willing to vomit.
Sickness or anything else?
You're willing to vomit for your reviews?
I am. That's how dedicated I am.
There you go, guys.
But I handed the bag of vomit with the review to Dan, so he knows my dedication.
Do you get motion sickness with any other first-person shooters, or was it just that one?
Maybe about half the first-person shooters I play. Borderlands is another one, and it's similar art style, so I don't know if it is kind of that semi-cel-shaded comic booky art style that gets me. But those two, and there's another one in the past year that I just got really bad motion sickness with. But Logan's Barf Mark... 2009 that he did last year. I have ginger root in my freezer all the time, and that helps out a lot.
Right.
So,
but I think that that it typically it has to do with field of view, right? That gives people nausea problems.
Oh, I have no idea, to be honest.
And that's I never get nauseous with playing games. So, but that's just one of the things I've heard. So maybe it's some weird field of view on those particular games that mess you up.
So you know what I think I need?
What's that?
A sweet 4-monitor setup to expand my field of view. That's what I'm going to need.
That couldn't hurt.
All right, so that's my next objective then. In the name of science, to see if what Dan says is true.
Eric, what awful games have I made you review so far? I've lost count.
As far as games, the first game I ever reviewed... was Star Wars The Clone Wars Republic Heroes, which was a game with platforming that tried to automatically steer you to the next platform, except it didn't work. So technically the Force was just pushing you off cliffs.
Nice.
Which isn't very Jedi of you.
The Force was having a bad day. You gotta cut it some slack.
Just the name of that game. Hi guys, by the way.
Evan's been lurking here the whole time.
Just the name of that game sounds like LucasArts is like, okay, we have a million different licenses. Let's force three of them together. It's like Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Republic, Heroes. Are you kidding me?
Attack of the Colons.
Can we work out what the acronym is on that real quickly? SWTCWRH. Consonants.
Also, wow. The combat consisted of holding down a button and pointing the mouse at enemies.
But you could say the same thing about Diablo, technically.
And
that's true.
And Call of Duty.
However, there is, I will say, there is a piece of hardware on the hardware side that you guys can look forward to in issue 201. Here's a little preview.
Whoa.
It's probably the worst piece of hardware I've ever tried to use.
what is the category that it fits into? Is it
control, like input.
All right. Duly noted. Evan, what's the worst game you had to review?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to remember.
It's all repressed, I know.
Pretty much. At PC Gamer, I haven't had to review too many bad things at PC Gamer. But
he gave that to the interns.
Yeah. Man, I really honestly, I'm having trouble because, I mean, when I was freelancing, the gig I had, I kind of got to pick. I was covering one game a week. And I sort of got to pick what it was, and it was kind of rare that I had to hit something bad. So I'm not sure if I have one off the top of my head, but they're out there.
Well, now, Evan, I'm just going to have to give you some terrible games to review.
Yeah. We can fix that real fast.
Please don't.
I think the only review that led me astray as far as like a game that I really didn't like, that PC Gamer liked, and this goes way back, was Black and White.
Really?
Because, man, I think PC Gamer gave that back then in the 90s, Editor's Choice, and I hated that game so much.
I love that game. I mean, there were other problems with the game that, like, at launch, there was kind of a snafu where you couldn't actually complete the game.
Really?
There was an issue with that.
Near that far along.
But I loved that game. I just loved being able to slap the pet and and get it to do all kinds of stupid stuff. You could make your pet eat its own poop. I mean, come on, what else do you want?
You weren't responsible for that score, were you?
No, that was before I was here.
Yeah.
But I loved that game. I played a ton of it.
Yeah. Did you just not like the concept, Andy?
Dude, maybe I was just a little bit on the young side when it came out. Like, maybe I was too in my teens or something. Because, man, it just really was not compelling. And I just figured, I felt like there was not enough control over what, and I had no idea what my objectives were. Like, what do I do? I slap around this monkey and give these guys to prey? Like, what the hell?
Yes. Yes, you do.
That's exactly correct.
It's like, can I have a gun now?
It was a little bit, difficult to get the hang of it in that you didn't have direct control over your followers. You had to kind of, you could pick them up and throw them, which is awesome.
Yeah,
you can set them on fire or electrocute them, also awesome. You can feed them to a giant monkey, also awesome.
I tried all that and I somehow wasn't accomplishing my goals by just doing that.
but doing that in itself is accomplishing the goal of setting your villagers on fire. I don't know. I would even suggest that you go back and try it again.
Wow.
Is that
really?
I enjoyed the hell out of that game.
Okay. What about Black and White 2?
I know.
Should you go back and try that or just stick with the original?
Stay away from that.
Yeah, I mean the Black and White 2 was pretty good. I didn't like it quite as much, honestly. It for one thing, it did away with the gesture controls. I loved the gesture controls for casting spells. I thought it fit that game perfectly. Even though it was sometimes frustrating when you were, unable to cast the spell you wanted on the moment's notice, I would have loved if they had just kept it in there as an option. Making like a swirl to cast like a wind spell or I guess it was water. That to me was a brilliant little touch for that game. And it did give you more direct control over your minions in that you could create an army and then you could order that army around like in an RTS. But the biggest problem with it was it took away multiplayer. There was no multiplayer in it and it turns it into more of an RTS and reduces what you'd want the RTS part for. That was kind of a misstep, but it was very pretty. The creatures looked awesome, and I think they were a little bit smarter I think one of the big disappointments with that game though was realizing that the creature was not as smart as it initially appeared to be. You know, once you figure out that the things that it's doing are not as dynamic as they are kind of presented as or appear to be initially, it kind of takes a step down.
All right, gentlemen, I must run off to do more interviews at GDC, which you can expect to hear about in the next issue. I will hand it off to in the capable hands of Dan Stapleton.
What did I do to deserve that? All right, fine.
Yeah, Josh, by the way, the traffic's going to suck.
Yeah?
Right, just so you know, it's pretty much gridlocked. Because people in San Francisco, a little fact here, they don't know how to drive when it rains. They
like,
lose their
not even rains. We're talking like sprinkling.
Yeah.
Like barely a mist and boom, gridlock.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've been looking forward to this storm for like all week. So
it was actually pouring pretty good.
Yeah, it should be here tomorrow.
San Francisco standards anyway. Anyway, as we were saying, do we have another question?
Hey PC Gamer, this is Dalen from South Dakota, and I just wanted to let you know how elated I was when I saw Mod's Grave down at the bottom of the page, on the mod page.
Oh,
I just thought
God.
That was fantastic. So, just like everyone else says, keep up the great work. I don't want to say anything else, so have a good day, guys.
So this guy just called us to let us know that he's overjoyed that we killed an old lady. And a fictional old lady in our magazine that was responsible for covering Moz. If you guys missed it, for a couple months, we had a correspondent named Maud with a U covering Moz. This was Logan's brilliant invention, and I'm not being sarcastic. I thought it was a cool idea. And we decided, probably because of the redesign, to kill her or push her away. And any issue that we did, there's like a small obituary, I guess. So, well, good eye, I guess. Wow.
I'd just like to point out that's the second caller in 2 months from South Dakota. So I am very proud of my home state.
So that's like everybody in South Dakota.
Yeah, there's like, yeah. You know.
100% of people in South Dakota listen to this show. That's interesting.
It's probably all the gamers for sure.
Play as or against Napoleon Bonaparte, the greatest military tactician in history, leading thousands of troops on an unparalleled bid for power in this newest chapter of the award-winning Total War series. Sega's Napoleon Total War, in stores February 23rd, rated T for teen.
All right then, let's move on to playlists really quick. Well, actually, Evan, you haven't had a chance to tell your favorite part of GDC yet that you've been talking about.
Oh gosh, there's amazing stuff that I can't talk about. Oh my gosh, that happened yesterday. I'm really excited about. My favorite part, probably Eric and I yesterday. I don't know if you mentioned it earlier, Eric. If it was a topic, we had a chance to talk to Andres from Ace Team, the guys.
Yeah. I wasn't sure how much I could talk about, so I just left it alone.
The guys that developed Xenoclash, of course, our top indie game of 2009, and just really some fantastic conversation there to see what they're working on and that we're going to be covering very, very exclusively very soon that I'm really excited to tell you guys about. Also had a chance to meet with the guys from Tripwire Interactive, the creators of Red Orchestra. And this morning I had a meeting with Brad Wardell. And,
of Stardock.
Yeah, of Stardock. And he's doing well. It's funny. The first thing he mentioned when I came in the door was, just that like, oh, it's Evan, the guy that beat me at Demigod. And my therapist said this and this and this. And, he can't forget the fact that we beat him at his own game, which is pretty terrific. I don't know. It's just you're reminded of what a small industry it is when you see the same people over and over and over again from different websites. You know, just seeing Warren Spector around, seeing Jordan Weissman, the guy that made MechWarrior and Fossa Studios around. It's just a cool environment to be in to feel like you're part of this family. I guess not to get too sentimental, but
that was way too sentimental. You got too sentimental.
Indeed. And I also ran into David Brevik today, one of the lead, I think, programmers on Diablo.
Yeah. And he's at Gazillion now, right?
Yes.
Working on one of their MMOs.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think his role is sort of akin to studio manager now, but they do LEGO Universe and Jumpgate and that stuff now. So it's just cool running into people and seeing faces that you only see a few times a year sometimes.
Yeah, I saw Peter Molyneux walking around. That was kind of neat. I haven't seen him in a while because he hasn't been doing anything on the PC, although he has lately been hinting that Fable 3 might come to the PC, which would be the first thing Microsoft has put out on the PC in several years.
I hope he can make it happen. He was saying very directly in his speech when they were showing a lot of the new stuff in Fable 3 that he would love it to come out on PC. You know, that's verbatim. And he just loves some of the cool stuff that's happening on PC, and it's a good place to be, in his opinion. So,
but wouldn't commit to it, claiming that there were Microsoft snipers watching.
Yeah, you could see some red dots dancing in the background.
Okay, so yeah, on to playlists. Let's start with Eric, just to mix things up. And Eric, you're not allowed to say wow. Don't say actually, it. I'll come over there. Don't make me come over there.
There has been very little wow this week. I can't claim none.
Said it. God damn
it. And the main game I'm playing, I won't really go into because it is Final Fantasy 13 for the Xbox. but on the PC side of things,
that was the sound of a gun cocking, I think.
Here's a cruise missile back at you. anyhow, the listeners, you know, are partaking in this Nerf fight. Great. After seeing that wonderful Tron Legacy trailer, which I got so excited for, I found my old Tron 2.0 disc, booted it up, and man, that game is fun. It was sadly ignored too. It's just really cool being in that crazy neon universe and trying to break through firewalls with a rocket launcher. And having a sniper rifle that shoots ones and zeros. It's just a really cool universe, really well done shooter. That's been most of my PC playtime this week.
I think the reason I ignored that game in particular is I never actually saw Tron.
Oh, sin.
I haven't seen it either.
What?
We're having a movie night.
Do you guys, I'll send you my copy if you need it.
It's like 80s weird Disney sci-fi.
No, like, dude, don't write it off like that, okay?
It has been written.
Don't. No.
First, there is nothing wrong with Disney, first of all. And it's such good sci-fi. It's computers and nerdiness, but done right because it was written by nerds.
Now, I think we just have to take into account that we're being told not to write, and there's nothing wrong with it because it's Disney by somebody who listens to a lot of Hannah Montana.
Yeah, well, you know.
Anyway, Andy.
Wow.
What are you playing?
I know what I really, really want to play so badly because I got a taste of it, and I want more. And that's Battlefield Bad Company 2. And
You just got a taste? You didn't get to play anymore?
Yeah, I've only been playing like a little bit at a time, and it took a while to get used to. And Evan, I don't know how into Battlefield 2 you were, but there's certain things that are just sort of wrong about Bad Company 2 at first when you
I'm interested.
No prone. Like how do you what?
Right.
Then medics start with a PKM. That's weird.
They don't have the defib, they don't have the healing kit.
Well, that's a whole nother issue too. But like
yeah, that's bizarre.
I just want
smaller maps, fewer vehicles.
Smaller maps is actually cool because the maps I really appreciated on Battlefield 2 were the ones where infantry actually mattered. The larger maps, infantry becomes a pain in the butt rather than being number one on the map. You know, you can't
just getting from point A to point B was a hassle.
Yeah. So the smaller maps are cool. And I finally got into a match the other night on one of the lovely War Croissant server.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan, for setting those up. And boy, did I have a blast playing it. Oh my gosh. It was everything Battlefield is good for, like squad combat where your squad is spawning off you, which is an improvement because you don't have to be the squad leader to have people spawn off you. So you're not like stuck just hiding out so people can spawn off you, which is awesome. And then using the context sensitive, like what's it called? I forget what they call it, like the social button or something.
Oh yeah. Spot.
The, communicate or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they had a version of that in Battlefield 2, but it's really effective in this because you can be like, infantry, there, and they'd say all the cool buzzwords like military stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you can tell them, and you can also use it on points to tell your team to, that you want to like go assault Bravo or whatever, like if you're doing that map. And I had such a good map game that I can't wait to get back into it. It was like better than anything I've played in a long time.
Yeah, that feature itself, the spotting, it's not like this mastercraft amazing game mechanic. It's not like this innovative crazy thing. It's just really useful and practical. And you think about all the nice VO that's sort of generated in around mm-hmm. Team Fortress 2. I think that's kind of where they got it from myself. Like the way the characters just say things at random. I mean, it feels organic and it feels at random, but it's very purposeful. Like I'm being attacked or I'm hurt, I'm injured, or there's a sniper over there.
Oh, yeah. Like it's very useful. And Battlefield 2 did it to an extent, but it's a little bit more in your HUD this time because it'll show up on your squad's HUD.
Yeah.
Like a little triangle above the target. And it'll like approximate it. If they go behind cover, it'll like approximate where they might be. But then if they're out of view long enough, it like goes away. So it's pretty well done. Like, I don't know. I'm excited. Are my hopes going to be dashed, Evan? Have you played it long enough that you're kind of over it? Or like, what's the general feeling?
No, I'm not over it. I'm like level 12. I think the level cap's 30 or something. I'm not even positive, but it's only gotten better so far. I think. There's somebody on Twitter that told me that I have to do a public service announcement, and I might have actually done it if I had some time, to tell people to stop playing so much Recon. Recon is the sniper class.
Yeah, I tried playing Recon, and I was like, no, this is not as much fun as I thought it would be.
Yeah, there's kind of situations if I think our servers are going to be 22 player cap instead of 32, or like I mentioned a couple podcasts ago, we're going to have like more medium sized servers than, you know, just one big server. Because this is like, I'm broadening this conversation so much, but I was talking with John Gibson, the CEO of Tripwire, the guys that make Red Orchestra and Killing Floor. And we're having this conversation about just like respawn, like game types and like single life game types and Counter-Strike and like ticket systems like the one Battlefield uses. And we're saying how in Battlefield and Team Fortress 2, where there's like essentially a timer, right? You have a certain amount of resource or time to complete an objective. And in most cases, you know, if it's a public game, if you're not in voice chat with people just kind of mess around until they have, you know, they're like, okay, we only have this amount of lives or time left. We have to actually work together and, you know, restructure our equipment to make things happen. And that's kind of what happens in some Battlefield games, I think. Like, I don't know if the voice chat doesn't work. It works sometimes, but people don't use it whatsoever. Like, maybe everybody else uses Ventrilo, but it's just a lack of teamwork in some situations. But that's kind of a good thing. I mean, in the same way, it's definitely not a game where one player can take over a game because of the reload times are so long. Switching between weapons is like a really expensive process in terms of animation. So, I don't know. I'm really, it's the game I'm playing most right now still, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
That's all I can say.
Cool.
Whew, sorry, that went everywhere.
Andy, I just wanted to ask. So you play medic. I just wanted to, just kind of curious about your loadout.
Well, I just barely was able to unlock the base med pack, like the heal kit.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like, okay, now I can finally actually be a medic, which is weird because I was like, well, I guess I'll play medic because that's my class from Battlefield 2, but I can't really do anything until I get the essential equipment. So that was a little weird, like having to unlock the base gear. But I don't know what else.
Yeah. It's a really terrific class. I mean, one of the first gadgets you get is this motion sensor thing that basically kind of like area spots automatically, I think, enemies that enter that radius.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
You unlock, instead of the C4, which is also really, really useful for taking out tanks, you unlock the mortar strike, which is like a pair of binoculars that you pull up and you call in a mortar strike on a specific spot. And it actually recharges pretty quickly, like every 90 seconds or something. So
that's like from enemy territory back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. It's really useful for if people are really hunkered behind something or there's a group of snipers that you know you can take out because they're not going to move. It's good.
I'm considerably impressed by how diverse the engineer feels. It's pretty much the only class I've been playing right now, and it's not just running up to tanks and you know, hitting them with your repair tool. It's knocking down walls so your teammates can just rush in, and it's all sorts of really cool stuff. I'm having a blast with it. So, yeah.
It's pretty clear to me at this point that I need to play more of that, because I've jumped in for a few minutes here and there. I just haven't really devoted a whole lot of time to it.
Yeah. Plus, there's humongo glowy tracers coming off of the tanks. That doesn't get you excited. I don't know what will.
But, so, Evan, I guess you just said what you've been playing, huh?
Yeah, pretty much Battlefield. I really can't wait to dig into Chaos Rising. I think Relic simply has some of the most talented animators, character animators in the business. And, I mean, you compare it to a game like StarCraft, where I think I might have been saying this a couple weeks ago, or maybe just to you, Dan. In StarCraft, you really, I mean, you're punished to some extent by watching your own success, right? If you send in a fleet of carriers, and you're devastating enemy's base, or you're, you know, defending an attack successfully, you'd be better off focusing on your tech upgrades and like micromanaging stuff and like really focusing on your resource management and stuff like that, instead of really just watching the battle take place and enjoying like that build up. That's not always the case, but you know, sometimes. Whereas in Dawn of War, you're really just rewarded because you're really at the most managing four units or four squads, and the battle animations are just perfect. I mean, it's the system they develop alone for just the way squads like fight other squads, right? Where say there's five units in a squad, you sort of automatically know once two of those units die, they're down to sort of 60 or 70% effectiveness. It's just like a very easily communicated thing, and the game has no right being that detailed for being an isometric RTS.
That's what I've been playing. That was going to be my big thing. Thanks for stealing it. Dawn of War, Chaos Rising. It is a very different game from StarCraft, and I actually just lost a game of StarCraft 2 last night because I didn't just like stop to watch a battle play out, but I had sent burrowed roaches into an enemy base and surfaced under his all of his probes. He was Protoss, so I surfaced under his resource gatherers, took all them out, and then was micromanaging them in order to take out his Nexus as well as his main base. And while I was doing that, I did take out the base, but I didn't manage to take out all of his units before I was prioritizing taking out the base rather than the units. So he still had a big crowd of units left. I had neglected to actually rebuild all of my units as I was losing them. So I wasn't able to build a defensive force before his big gob of units got to my base and took me out. Yeah. So attention is a resource, they like to say.
Yeah. So, definitely. It's at times a words per minute exercise, maybe.
But in Chaos Rising, I mean, there is a lot of the same thing going on. And that's why co-op is such you get exponentially more powerful when you're playing in co-op, because your attention is devoted to just two characters instead of four. So each character has a bunch of different abilities, that they can use, and using the right one at the right time is crucial, obviously. So, when you've got four squads on hand, you have to make sure that each squad is where they need to be and using the power they need to be at the right time, which gets to be very difficult. It's a handful. And especially with the new class, which is the Librarian, he has a bunch of different spells that you can customize build up to with his stats. And for example, there's one called Split Earth that's like a directional thing. So you cast on one point and then cast another point, and it draws a line between them, and then the spell will cast in that direction. And since it's, you know, very directional, it's like a cone kind of attack. You have to make sure you line it up so that the enemy is going to be exactly where you want him to be when the spell actually casts, because there's a couple seconds delay. And doing all of that takes so much attention that all your other guys are not being nearly as effective as they could be if you were managing them. So I wouldn't go so far as to say that the Dawn of War doesn't require as much micromanagement as StarCraft does. I mean, it may not require it, but it benefits from it as much as StarCraft does.
Sure. I mean, in the most fundamental way, you're not rebuilding units. I mean, I guess you have the ability to have them respawn if you return them, if you revive them, or if you return them to your spawn points, but you're not focused on manufacturing in any way.
That's true. There is no economy to worry about in Dawn of War. So you do get to concentrate more on the killing of things, which is where, you know, and Dawn of War does do a spectacular job of the killing animations, as you were saying. And, you know, it might be a little bit of an exaggeration to say that they're one of the best animators out there, Relic is. They're very, very good. But their animations are different from a lot of the animations that you see in like a shooter or a RPG, even where you have up close facial animations. Because I mean, that to me is almost more impressive than whole body animations, like the getting a face to really look human, like with Alex in Half-Life 2.
Sure.
Like that is, you know, some of the most impressive animation ever. But that, you know, and not to diminish Relic's ability to make some really awesome, like, killing move, acrobatic animations, when your, you know, Force Commander, like, plants his hammer in somebody's chest, and it looks awesome. So.
Before I forget, that reminds me, Brad from Stardock, Brad Wardell says he wants to play at StarCraft.
Okay, well, I have to set that up. I'm getting a little bit better. I'm still struggling with playing multiple RTSs at the same time. Especially if I get into Ruse this weekend, that's gonna take me down a notch. Did I tell you I got demoted to the Copper League, Evan?
He's in Copper too, but he said, like, back in the day before like the Koreans started playing, as he put it, he was saying, like, he was really, really talented and, like, one of the top 10 or 15 Terran players for a time or something.
Yeah, but he was bragging about his demigod skills too. I mean,
indeed.
But I might have to practice a little bit more before I take him on. But yeah, I'd be willing to throw down.
Excellent.
All right, so that'll just about do it for us today. We'll have more good stuff next week. Hopefully a few NDAs will have lifted by then. We'll be able to tell you some more stuff that we saw at GDC this week. So in the absence of Josh Augustine, I will bid you adieu for myself, Evan Lottie, Eric Belsas, and Andy Bauman. Please call in and leave us some more questions for next week. Andy, what's the number for that?
1-877-404-1337, extension 724, which is PCG.
Or email an MP3 to pcgamer@gmail.com. Also, please check out
pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com.
I failed. Also, check out pcgamer.com to subscribe to our lovely magazine, or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/pcgamermagazine.
I hope I didn't star a wrong file.
You starred a Trojan.
There are Star Silence. Has anyone played that?
No, my DS. No. My DS is affectionately known as my Phoenix Wright machine.
All right, why don't we skip that question?